back on Canucks Central in the Mobile Kintec studio here at Rogers Arena. The Canucks and New York Rangers here at the rink. Did I just see it's country night at Rogers Arena? With the Rangers in town? Why don't they do that when, like, Dallas is in town or something? Or something remotely more country than New York?
Yeah.
Am I thinking too deeply about this? You can be honest with me, guys.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Yeah. Now, let's bring in our next guest. That is Luke Fox with Sportsnet. I don't know, Luke. Is it just weird to me that the Canucks are having country night with the Rangers in town? I mean, maybe Dallas or one of those teams would be better.
I didn't know that was the case, but it seems like an odd fit. I don't know. It's country night every night in Toronto now with Taylor Swift in town.
Yeah, we're going to be doing that pretty soon here in Vancouver
next month. Yeah,
continues her trip through Canada and just like absolutely taking over a city while it is going on. It's been an interesting day. There's a lot of different hockey news that we want to get your take on, and we'll start here in Vancouver. I mean, it's been. Look, the Canucks record is fine if you look at it and you look at where they sit in the standings. The process hasn't always been there, and now the injury bug is really hit them with the news of JT Miller on personal leave right now. Besser's been out of the lineup. Demko hasn't played yet. What's your view of how the Canucks have started this season?
Yeah, uneven, very uneven, and bad at home, I guess. You know, if you want to be bad in one place, you'd rather it be on the road. I think a lot of it maybe has to do with expectations, right? It frames everything about how we view a team. You know, the Vancouver Canucks could do no wrong last year because, you know, some people may have thought they'd be ready to take a step and maybe be a playoff team, but no one expected them to be a legitimate contender in the Pacific and then go on the run they did. And it's all gravy, right? And then now, to follow that up, they're having a rough go of it. And it seems from the outside for me that a lot of it started with the uncertainty around Thatcher Demko. And Kevin Lankinen comes in and hot start, but then the goaltending cools off a little bit. Pettersson gets off to a bit of a slow start. And now JT Miller's not quite looking like himself. Rick Tocchet's trying to push some buttons that coaches don't always have to go to right in November, unless you're Jim Montgomery, and we know how that ended. And it just seems like, you know, had they had this type of season last year, it would be different. But because it's on the heels of a really impressive showing, it causes a bit more panic, I think, in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as far as, you know, Pettersson is concerned, now with JT, you know, being away with that leave of absence from the team for personal reasons, they need other guys to step up. And Pettersson so far this year obviously hasn't been the star player or the level that we've seen before. But these are the moments, right, Luke, where star players step up, especially when you have key guys out of the lineup.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, I don't want to bring it to the center of the universe, but right now Austin Matthews has been out 6 games and Mitch Marner's been their best player. Mm-hmm. Now he's a good player anyway, but being around him, you sense that about him, like, oh, I don't have to defer to him. He's not going to score a goal a game. I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to rise to the occasion. Same with John Tavares. And, you know, that doesn't mean that the Canucks have to act exactly like the Leafs, but hopefully it snaps everyone's attention. You know, JT Miller is not only one of the best players on the ice for them, but he's also kind of a bit of the heartbeat guy of the team. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he kind of sets the tone in terms of his passion and how engaged he is every night. So with him out, that is, you know, you could sulk and say, oh no, we're missing one of our best guys and we're kind of scuffling along. Or you can say, oh no, this is my chance to maybe step up and speak a bit more on the bench. You know, feel confident enough to try and make a game-changing play and just try to elevate that much more when that guy's out. And I think it's a bit of human nature, and it's also like a great test of what a team has. Do they rise in the face of adversity, or do they get a little nervous and do they quake? You know, hopefully that experience of you know, having some hard playoff rounds last year gives this team confidence and that they can survive this.
Yeah, and I think everybody is looking at Elias Pettersson, who's starting to come out of it a little bit more. He's on a bit of a point streak here. We saw the patented one-timer the other night in the loss to the Nashville Predators. It's just it's been strange seeing a player as prolific as Pettersson be in a slump as long as he was going back to the end of last season. But now he's got the big contract, and hey, there's a lot of guys in this league that understand and have gone through it. When that contract comes in, the expectations get ratcheted up to, you know, a million degrees.
Yeah, I mean, and rightly so. I mean, it's kind of the part of the deal of pro sports, right? I never fault a player for taking the money that they can negotiate and fairly earn. But with that, you know, not taking a team discount and with the heavy pay comes a little more scrutiny. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just part of the deal. And, you know, I think for one, it seemed from, you know, the outside reading, watching his interviews, whatever, that, you know, the uncertainty around the contract was getting to him. And then once he got it, it was really important for him, you know, to get such a, you know, that much security, which is very understandable. But then once he got it, you could tell that mentally he was trying to live up to it. And then when he didn't immediately, it just kind of snowballed on him, because I don't think anyone questioned this guy's ability. It's just a lot of times it's what's going on between the ears.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned this what is a pretty big news day as well. A lot of things happening, and you know, Jip Montgomery may be the biggest one, although the Ovechkin one is pretty close considering how hot he's been. But the Bruins finally make their move. It seemed like people were just waiting for something to happen with the Bruins, and we've seen that with different teams when they look that listless, they're losing to bad teams, they're not competitive. It just looks like they're waiting for something to happen. The question is this the right thing to happen? Time will only tell, but it seems like they didn't have many other options outside of making this move on the head coach.
Yeah, it's the sport we cover, right? You know, it's the coach is the scapegoat. I don't think Jim Montgomery is to blame entirely for the Bruins' slow start. You know, if you look at the roster, if David Pastrnak's not on the ice, they don't have a lot of scoring punch. Like, they are really thin up front. You know, they were dependent on strong defense, and I think their blue line's okay. And then they were getting by last year on some phenomenal goaltending. So they traded one guy away, Linus Ullmark, and the other guy showed up late at camp because he was in a contract dispute and hasn't quite found his footing. You know, Jeremy Swayman is sub 900. So their formula for success, which was good defense, guys, forwards playing kind of above their head. Like, they got great years from Coyle and Zacha, and now, you know, you subtract some guys, the goaltending is not as good, confidence is a bit low, and the easiest thing to do is blame the head coach. And I have no doubt that Jim Montgomery will get another job as soon as he wants one, because this guy has had a winning record. He has a Jack Adams, and clearly he was a scapegoat. In saying that, I do think he was out of answers. I don't think that, you know, I think he got desperate. You know, he was yelling at Marchand on the bench. He scratched Pastrnak. He was trying anything to get their attention, and they weren't responding. They got booed off the ice in his final game in a lopsided loss to the Blue Jackets. So this is a management group, Cam Neely, Don Sweeney, saying we don't want to give up on this season, and we're throwing a Hail Mary here, hoping for the new coach bounce with Joe Sacco.
It would be a for a year where the depth at the trade deadline, the feels like there's a lack of big pieces available at the trade deadline. It's really curious with Brad Marchand still unsigned and a pending unrestricted free agent. I know he's been a Bruin for life, but that would be a fun chaos storyline to follow if the Bruins end up going into a bit of a sell mode for the rest of this season and Brad Marchand becomes available.
Oh, boy, wouldn't it? And, you know, even though he's off to a slow start by his standards, he's still an excellent two-way player. He's great on both special teams. You know, he gives it his all. No one questions the guy's heart come playoff time. That would be something. I have my doubts. I think he wants to follow in the steps of Patrice Bergeron. But you know what? A lot of people thought Zdeno Chara would retire a Bruin, and he didn't, right? Like, sometimes crazy things happen. You know, he Marchand has a cup, but he wants another one. And, you know, as long as the pen hasn't hit the paper, there will be those questions. Would I bet on it? No. I think he probably finds a way to get it done. Mm-hmm. But the other factor in here is I think he feels like he took a bit of a team-friendly deal. It seemed fair at the time, but then he outplayed his contract, and he has kind of been a bargain for them for a long time. So I don't think he wants to, you know, just take a really low AAV just because he's getting older. I think he wants fair market value. So that could be a little bit of a sticking point here.
Well, they're also in a really tight spot with long-term commitments on their cap. They went out and signed Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov from the Canucks, and neither one of those guys has really worked out for them so far, and fans are frustrated with how they're playing. So it's, even if they trade Marchand, like, it's more, you can't rebuild. It's more about you have to reload and find somebody else. And honestly, Luke, I'm not sure you're finding a better player than Brad Marchand on the trade market or in free agency next year.
No, I mean, that would be giving up, right? That would be if they're totally out of the race come trade deadline.
Yeah.
That would be like waving the white flag. And they're obviously they're not doing that now, because you're right, they're trying to change the coach. They're trying to do anything they can to get this thing back on the rails. So I like when I'm talking about that, that would be like a last minute mm-hmm. deadline decision if they're completely out of the race. Then you have to start having those conversations at least. But right now, they're hoping that a fresh voice gets these guys going. Hopefully, you know, Swayman returns to form and they can start to build some confidence. Right now, they're really a wreck. They're not a great team, but they're not. I don't believe they're as bad as they have been showing.
It's interesting. You know, the goaltending hasn't been there. Team defense has dropped quite a bit, at least analytically, and the finishing is dried up for this Bruins team. That all lines up for a bad recipe. It's not going to taste very good when all those things are going against you.
The good thing is wild card 2 in the East looks like 500 gets you in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of similar last year too with how Washington snuck in. And hey, Washington, you know, they have done the quick turnaround. Hey, Luke, a little bit of cap space and some nifty work there from the Washington Capitals, getting in Pierre-Luc Dubois, Andrew Mangiapane, Logan Thompson, what a find he's been in net. And I know you wrote about him recently, and I want to talk about that. But the biggest thing was Alex Ovechkin finding the fountain of youth, taking Father Time to quadruple overtime. He is, and he's now injured, which is not so great. Out week to week, but I mean, we were all marveling at how Ovi was having the best start to a season in his career from a goal-scoring perspective at age 39.
Yeah, pretty phenomenal tear that he was on, and I was actually down in Washington, D.C. for a few nights last week, hanging around the Capitals, talking to a few of them, and one thing that really stood out to me is how much not only that Ovi wants it and wants to get this record this year, but how much the whole dressing room wants it for him. They want to be part of it, right? Mm-hmm. They want to say that they were on the ice or jumping up and down on the bench when he became the greatest goal scorer of all time. So the team was rallying around it. The coach was rallying around it in that Spencer Carberry spent a lot of time looking at video and trying to find different ways to put Ovechkin into scoring spots. So we all know that he sets up shop at the left dot on the power play and just kind of cranks away one-timers, and he's going to get goals that way. But he was really encouraging the captain to drive the net a bit more and maybe get some cheeky goals off the side of his pants or bang in a rebound and trying to analyze ways that he could score more. Part of it was the chemistry he had with Dylan Strome, who assisted on his first like 11 goals, I want to say. Like they really struck it up, and Protas on the other wing, big, huge forechecking Russian, and him and Ovechkin hit it off. So the line had chemistry, and then the fact that the team's doing well, I think made everyone feel a little bit more encouraged. Ovechkin too, because imagine if the team was as bad or worse than last season, it would feel more like a circus. Like, let's get the puck to Ovi, and yeah, we're not a relevant team, but I know we want the record. Whereas it felt like everyone was part of it because the team was actually relevant And, you know, last I checked, I think they were like third overall in terms of points percentage, like a really positive story there in Washington.
I know you wrote recently about Logan Thompson and the great start he's off to with the Washington Capitals in between the pipes, and maybe it comes at the perfect time when, I don't know, Canada doesn't really have a goalie for the Four Nations face-off. I mean, it's take your pick as to who is the front runner. I mean, recently on the show, we were discussing if Marc-Andre Fleury still got a shout at one of the three goalie spots on that roster because of just the lack of options Canada has relative to the last time we had best on best 10 years ago.
Yeah, and the last time I talked to Don Sweeney, who's Canada's GM for this tournament, you know, the conversation was, well, no, we got some good contenders because think about all the cup winners. We got our guys that have been to the final, like Stuart Skinner had been to a final. Aiden Hill has a cup. Jordan Binnington has a cup. Darcy Kuemper has a cup. And so you're like, okay, yeah, but none of those guys are off to great starts. None of those guys are like, yeah, they have cup rings. They were part of good teams, but individually their goaltending hasn't been so undeniable this fall that you're like, that guy should start for Team Canada. So then you start, you know, really looking in the weeds. Is Cam Talbot in Detroit a bit of a journeyman at this point? Is he the guy? Because his numbers are pretty good. Logan Thompson is an interesting one. You know, I had a good chat with him about it, and he's like, I just want to be on that team. I'll be the practice goalie and then sit up in the press box. I want this so bad. And he, to me, would be like the longest of shots because he was never drafted. He doesn't really have much pedigree. Mm-hmm. Even Vegas turned him down. He said he wanted to be their number one. And he said, no, we're going with Aiden Hill. Sorry. And he's like, okay, trade me. And then he lands in Washington and he has not lost in regulation. He's 8-0-1. His save percentage is decent. And, you know, he's feeling it right now. And because it's a short tournament, you just wonder if a dark horse like Thompson gets onto the team because the turnaround between when they have to name the team, which is December 2nd, and when the tournament starts in early February, it's like the turnaround's pretty quick. It wouldn't hurt to add a guy that's feeling confident right now.
I've always kind of been of the thought that you probably just have to go with Jordan Binnington because out of all the goalies, he's the one that has actually had the longest stretch. And obviously Fleury has, but he's older now, doesn't play the starting net mining role. But he's had such a tough year, and we know it didn't go well for him on the international stage recently as well. So to your point, considering there's nobody who's a clear favorite, like Binnington would be by default, and even he's struggling, can you afford not to go with the hottest guy?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really short tournament, right? It's round robin, and then it's a final. If you make the final, you're playing four games. So you might use two goalies. You're probably not going to use three unless there's an injury. And, there's no sort of length for a goalie to get in and find his groove. So there's certainly an argument to just go with the hot hand. I would think Binnington is the number one, just based on the fact that, you know, his boss, Doug Armstrong, is also a decision maker with Team Canada. He's going to pick the Olympic team and, you know, some politics comes into play and probably he's looking at his goalie through some rose colored glasses. Hey, this is the guy that won St. Louis. It's only Stanley Cup. So he probably can, you know, sell it on the fact that this guy is a big game player, won a game 7 Stanley Cup final on the road in Boston, no less, which is where the Four Nations final will be. That just occurred to me. So, I mean, I think it's him, but when you're looking at his numbers, he's been okay, but not great.
Yeah, I'll never forget 2014. Martin St. Louis doesn't get picked for Team Canada. Yeah. Next thing you know, Steve, I want out of Tampa Bay. So,
These guys have egos, right? They take this stuff personally.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that, especially when it comes to wanting to play for your country and feeling like you deserve that spot. Before we let you go, Luke, you know, Elliot had the news over the weekend about the salary cap potentially increasing to above $95 million next year and for next season at the upper ceiling. And all I could think about was, well, how is this going to affect certain contracts that are coming up here in Vancouver? Maybe Brock Besser, once he gets back into the lineup, he's now earning a few more shekels, but ultimately, guys like Mikko Rantanen and Mitch Marner and their agents were probably smiling from ear to ear hearing that news and how they could be the next $12, $13 million men in the league.
Yeah, and how smart is it to be patient, right,
yeah.
and not sign something over the summer like Rantanen, Besser, Marner, Chychrun, Marchand, all these guys could have signed back on July 1, but you play it out, and if you're having a good year, like Rantanen and Marner are, it's like, okay, if you're, the agents are going to negotiate based on percentage of cap instead of dollar figure, and it's going to be fascinating because in both cases of Rantanen and Marner, the teams are going to push back and say, no, we have our internal caps. Mitch Marner, you can't have a higher AAV than Austin Matthews. Mikko Rantanen, you can't have a higher AAV than Nathan MacKinnon. And they're going to counter and say, well, those guys signed under the old CBA, under the old salary cap. Look how much it's jumped. So it's going to be make for some fascinating negotiations. And I'm really curious to see how it goes. I'm also a little fearful of what some of these GMs are going to do with this sudden influx of cash. Like, I think some third pair defenseman is going to get way overpaid or something like that too.
Yeah, it screams of Bismack Biyombo getting a $70 million from the Orlando
yeah,
Magic.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting because it is a shallow free agent pool coming up next summer as well. So could be dicey for some of these GMs and how they plan to use some of their newfound cap space. Luke, we always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this.
All right, have a good night, guys. Enjoy country night.
Yeah, we will. We're going to be firing up some Morgan Wallen and Kenny Chesney right around the corner. Thanks for this, Luke. That is Luke Fox here on Canuck Central.
Like James at Qualicum Beach says, Zach Bryan is in tomorrow night.
Ah, all right.
So maybe that's part of the reason.
Can't trust somebody with two first names, right? That's what I learned from Talladega Nights. I don't know.
I'm not going to diss a country artist. I'll let you do that because last time I said something about one of the most popular country artists. Like people were in my DMs on all social media platforms. And I don't want that smoke today. You know, I just don't have the energy for it.
We don't have the energy for that. But Brett Festerling's going to join us here in a second. But I did want to spare a time for thought on the upper limit to the salary cap potentially increasing. And sure, Besser's going to get a little bit more money probably because of that, right? Percentage of the cap is ultimately what matters most. But I think from a Canucks perspective, it might give them a little bit more freedom in the ability to acquire a contract with term going into next year if they get an extra $4 or $5 million to work with on next year's cap.
So like we were talking about before this news came out, the Canucks would have, after bringing on some minor league guys filling out roster spots, to sign Besser and say Lankinen, a backup goaltender,
yeah,
they would have about $12.5 million in cap space, right? Which would allow you to keep both, but don't do much beyond that. Well, mm-hmm. if the cap is going up, say $3 to $5 million above that, that's a $3 to $5 million player you can add on top of that. Now, that's also if you want to keep Lankin or not. But to your point, now if you make an addition and for a player who's making $5 million or more beyond this year,
Mike Matheson is a name we've talked about.
You
right?
can comfortably do that, and you can still keep Besser.
Yeah,
and you can still maybe perhaps if you really wanted to keep Lankin. So that's how it would change the equation.
So it opens up different possibilities at the deadline where maybe you're not just looking at rentals. You have the option to look at some guys with term and also factor that into keeping Besser for the long term as well. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We're at Rogers Arena. It's country night at Rogers Arena. Brett Festerling going to join us next on Sportsnet 650. Back in on Canuck Central, hour number two of the program. We're an hour away from pregame between the Canucks and New York Rangers getting going as the Canucks continue through this six-game homestand. They're 2-3 on it and in a tough spot here without JT Miller now as he's taken a personal leave of absence away from the team for an indefinite amount of time. So they'll have to step up here against one of the quality teams in the Eastern Conference to try and get a 500 road trip. We're in the Mobile Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Visit kintech.net. I should mention it is also a country night here at Rogers Arena for the Canucks and Rangers. Let's bring in our next guest, Brett Festerling. Brett, you a big country guy? You like country music through your travels as a professional hockey player?
Travels? I'm from the Caribou, man. I love country music.
I was going to say, man.
I just want to see Brett Festerling walking around the concourse tonight with a cowboy hat on and some cowboy boots.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say I want to see Brett Festerling at the Roxy on Sunday. Country night. But, yeah,
you would know
I think
that.
That'll be
yes.
great. I've heard about it.
Bring some tassels.
Well, I can imagine there was probably a few country nights when you played with the San Antonio Rampage, were there not?
Yeah, we actually, in San Antonio, you'd have to take a month-long road trip. So you'd be gone for 3 weeks to a month because they would have the massive radio or rodeo in the stadium. So you'd come back. But the worst part is you'd come back and then it'd smell like a barn for the next 6 weeks. So you want to get the call up before the rodeo.
Oh, was that like one of the trips if the players like were hurt, you'd be happy to stay back and enjoy the rodeo?
Yeah, actually, all the bars had like mechanical bulls, Latin music, line dancing. It was great. It was so much fun.
It is Brett Festerling, our guest here on Canucks Central, Canucks analyst, Canucks color analyst here on Saturday nights with Sportsnet 650. So, you know, we've all kind of been through it already. You know, JT Miller taking a personal leave of absence. You feel for the person most of all and hope that he comes through this on the other side and gets back to the team as quickly as possible while he goes through this. But for a hockey player and a hockey team and hockey coaches, it's like we've got to move on and we've got to figure out how to get a win tonight. Is that generally how it works through injuries and things of this nature when it comes to being on a team?
Yeah, next man up mentality, right? It's as much as, you know, we all care for Miller and want him to get back, and nobody wants that more than his teammates and his coaches. But realistically, it's a huge opportunity. If you look at even just Besser, maybe Garland, is that official? Is he out of the lineup tonight?
We don't know yet. So it's kind of a baby time decision.
But if you go possibility of Garland, Besser, and Miller out, look at a guy like Lekker Mäki that came up last week. Mm-hmm. You go from the AHL, now you're getting PP time and a lot of first line minutes with Besser out, and now you're going to be leaned upon pretty heavily to provide offense, and you probably have a little bit of rope too. So those are huge opportunities. Rattu's got to be able to take big draws now with Miller out. You saw Tocchet lean on him a bit in the third last game to get those draws. So it's huge opportunities for these guys to prove themselves, and it's adversity that kind of cauterizes your depth a bit in early in the season. So if you want to go through it, this is probably the time. Mm-hmm. And to put those young guys through their paces, there's no better chance than now, I'd say.
Oh, I mean, it sounds cliche and perhaps, you know, obviously, you know, perhaps a bit too much, you know, kumbaya, but you kind of have to just kind of sell all the positives right now and sell and lean into the cliches that it's early in the season. This is adversity that makes us stronger later on, but it's just finding ways to get guys to buy in and give a little bit more, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Find that next level of connectivity throughout the lineup with depth guys that maybe wouldn't have that ice time or wouldn't get those matchups in terms of the guys you're paired with or the guys you're going to play against. So yeah, you really need to lean into those facts, and that's got to be kind of your motivation moving forward here. And then when you get a chance, obviously you want to support everybody the way you can. But right now it's business-like and trying to get 2 points against a New York team that is not going to be easy. Like, they haven't been their best stealth probably as of late, but they're still one of the top teams in the league and definitely a cup contender. So it's not going to be an easy game tonight.
Well, and a team with a lot of high-end talent, and if you're not on your game defensively, they will definitely take advantage of those opportunities. And that's probably one of the themes of the season for the Canucks so far. They just haven't had the same success on the defensive side of the puck. And even in wins over Chicago on the weekend and at times against Nashville, you saw the lapses in defensive play, being on the wrong side of the puck at times. It's just been uncharacteristic of this team. And I guess it goes without saying, given how many absences they have right now, if they don't get back to the defensive solidity that they had last year, they're probably not going to have a lot of success through all of these absences.
Yeah, exactly. You need guys kind of working. You need all 20 guys now. You know, you have less guys that can kind of put the team on their back and drag them into the fight or go get those big goals at a time. So you need all 20 guys really pulling. And you're right, the details probably have lacked a bit on the defensive side, not necessarily the structure, but the details of, 3 feet above a guy, maybe just having a stick in the paint, boxing out, letting whoever's in net see the puck. Those little things, you need that from all 20 guys tonight at all times. And if you look at New York's game against Seattle, same thing. Seattle's probably carrying most of the play, playing well, and then Panarin just gets 1 second on the wall and finds Lafreniere backdoor out of a nothing play, really, and they use their skill to find that. So it's really a 60-minute game. If you have a lapse in thinking for a couple minutes or 30 seconds, they can make you pay pretty quick.
100%, right? And it's one of these games, too, where, you know, when I look at what the Rangers can do both on the power play and on the PK, there's really nothing that's easy, even though they've kind of struggled to score 5-on-5 on a higher level. And as far as needing a bit more from your higher-end players, we've seen Quinn Hughes really put a lot on his shoulders this season. And as far as Elias Pettersson is concerned, his game is coming along. You kind of need a bit more from him right now, don't you? Even though he has been playing better recently with JT out.
Yeah, we just talked about opportunities for the young guys. I think it's the same for Petey. Mm-hmm. He could be a hero again. Like, how that's a quick storyline change, too. So for him, he can take the ball and run with it here. And obviously, he's been trending in the right direction. Some power play goals the other night, or a goal the other night. So, yeah, use that confidence. And now probably more minutes and leaning on him a little more heavy to shoot and take those opportunities and take advantage of it. So, I would say it's just as much an opportunity for him to get back in his shape and good graces and be a hero to the fan base and the team right now. And I would say on top of that, for the aspect in terms of he's really been there to pick up any slack for the rest of the team in the last 2 years. So I think they can do their best to try to do it for him right now.
That line altogether, like DeBrusk and Sherwood with Pettersson, they were the most consistent line for the Canucks the last couple of games. And, I mean, the other night I'm watching Sherwood against his old team, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, how did Nashville let this guy go? I mean, I know the Canucks didn't win the game, but, geez, this Sherwood character, he's really having a time and a bigger role here in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's really obvious that that's exactly kind of what Nashville's missing, right, is that motor and that grit and that tenacity that he brings. And then Yeah, I thought he's played really well with that top line in the last couple of games. I feel like it's a bit of a Lafferty 2.0, but everything we thought would be positive with Lafferty in terms of the motor, the physicality, turning pucks over, and then making plays from that, I think that's come to fruition a bit more with Sherwood. And he looks really good in the role, and it seems like he's having fun creating things. But he was all over the ice against Nashville. He wanted to prove something in that game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that we've been kind of tracking is Dakota Joshua working his way back. And we know that he's gone through, you know, obviously a life-altering, very traumatic experience, and it's great to see him on the other side. But now he's trying to, you know, join a team that's, you know, 15, 16 games into an NHL season. When you look at incremental improvements, like, what are you looking to see from his game as he starts gearing up as the season goes on?
I think coming back from injuries is things start to slow down. You get to more into game shape. You start making little plays. Like, obviously, we don't know if Garland's in, but he was so good last year at making those little skill plays, whether it's in front of the net, on the wall, using his body, that kind of thing, just to keep possession or get offensive chances or even break pucks out. Just a little more time with the puck, a little more comfortable, and then getting the legs to get back into it or get on that forecheck. He was a absolute beast last year in terms of getting on forechecks, laying body, turning pucks over, and then getting to the net. So I think the more that he gets acclimated and back into shape, you'll just see the game slow down for him a bit more. He'll feel faster, look faster, probably a little more confidence, and carry that through. That's what I'd be looking for anyway.
We saw the coaching staff go away from the D pairs we've seen most often this year, right? Hughes and Hronek got split up a little bit against Nashville. I think it had more to do with Soucy and Myers and their continued struggles this season. What are you seeing specifically with Soucy and Myers that is not allowing them to find some of the success they had towards the end of last season and in the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, minus the last two, I thought they started to turn it around a bit, and I think they put some games together there. I mean, watching the Nashville game, it looks just a little disconnected. There's probably some details in terms of little passes hit, whether it's breakout pass, reverses, those kind of things that aren't as crisp as they were, maybe not going north as fast. You see them, like if you compare the first period against Nashville, I think they both agree that wasn't the best period for both of them, but you get to the third period and I think they made a lot of good plays and they got pucks going north, and that eventually helped out on Vancouver's second goal there up to Hyman and over for the one-timer with Sherwood. But I talk about it so much. Simplifying with big guys is so huge, and if they can simplify it and get it north and be crisp with those passes, I think that's a big part of it, is just making sure every pass and every exit cleaner and crisper, and you're really focusing in on that moment and making sure, you know, that the puck's not ending with your play kind of thing, and getting it going north. And then on top of that, Canucks need to do a good job, especially with short on bodies, of turning that into a forecheck or getting pucks deep. Becomes so important with short bodies right now. And then if you have D that are struggling and you're not getting that far blue line and you're not getting forecheck, then it just turns into this constant cycle of lines coming back at you and not being able to get your gap, and you're getting tired, and then it just snowballs into something bad. So I would say simplifying, getting it north as fast as you can, and then in turn the forwards need to give them options and then get it deep to help them kind of get in that rhythm of playing normal minutes and feeling like you're kind of contributing to the offensive side and getting the play going, not necessarily just grinding in front and lifting sticks and trying to make chip passes the entire night.
You know, and on the defensive side of things individually, one player who's been very impressive recently and he's also been scoring as well as Erik Brännström on the back end. And, you know, we're seeing him be more productive. He's gaining more confidence. As far as his role, he still very much gets offensive zone starts. He's not playing big minutes. He's not getting matchup minutes. But, you know, there have been a lot of struggles even for Soucy and Myers. Would you feel comfortable if he would play more, or do you want to keep seeing him kind of excel at what he's doing right now?
Oh, I wouldn't mind him playing more. He's all over the notes from last game. He was great. His skating's been a huge standout for me. He had a lot of drags and shots, especially with that fourth line last game, which was really nice to see that little bit of chemistry, and Brännström getting the puck going north like we were talking about, getting shots to the net, which created a lot of havoc, and getting that goal with Ratu. So I would like to see him get more ice time. I guess we've seen Tocchet kind of tinker with forward lines so much to try to find those matches and chemistry up there. If Soucy and Myers aren't working, I don't know how much more leash there is in terms of keeping them together, or you start tinkering on that back end. So I wouldn't mind seeing a little more opportunity for him, and I think he's earned it. He's been a huge surprise, I would say, in the last month of how well he has played. So I'm all for it, but we'll see what happens tonight.
Well, you know, as the other thing I want to ask you about, for a guy like Carson Soucy, and, you know, last year we spoke so highly of, you know, how well he moved the puck and how clean he played and how smart he was, and I refuse to believe that he can do the things he was showing us last year. What does it get like, though, sometimes when things snowball? It seems like every time he's out there, something bad happens, whether it's his fault or not. Like, do you get to a point sometimes when you just don't feel comfortable when you're out there?
Oh, yeah, big time. And then it's just, it adds doubt in your mind, and then you're just taking an extra split second to make decisions or question the decision that you're seeing in front of you, whether it's a pass or a chip. And then by the time you thought about it, there's somebody on you that's hitting you or poking the puck away or whatever it is. And then that kind of fuels that whole doubt situation. So, I mean, the big thing for me was when I was playing, and obviously I'm a more of a meat and potatoes guy, but really strip it down to the basics. Like we talked about the simplify, but it's still there, but it's kind of layered on top of things maybe you're trying to do wrong. So I think if you can strip it down to basics, and it might be just a period. Hey, this is how I'm going to play the period. It's going to be super simple. I'm making first passes. I'm going to hit everything that moves. That goes good. You get into the second period, okay. Games open up a bit. Let's get our feet moving north. Every time I get it from Myers, I'm getting going north, and then I'll continue to make those same passes in the third period. Maybe you're trying to shoot more, or you're making that time up and through. So just the progression of feeling better, but adding more to your game as that goes is how I feel about it. So it is easy to doubt yourself when you get in those situations, especially in the market like this. I'm sure you know he's heard it, whether he wanted to or not, that he's not having a great year, and players are their own worst critics always. So I'm sure he's not happy with where he's at as well. So I think the biggest thing is try to get that confidence back, but really simplify it, start at the building blocks and go from there.
Brett, we'll see you Sunday at the Roxy.
Oh, see you there, Cowboy Boots.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
See you, bye.
There is Brett Festerling joining us here on Canuck Central ahead of Country Night at Rogers
yes.
Arena.
It'll be a fun night. No, it is. It will be. I'll enjoy it.
I mean, I do.
You like country.
I've kind of come around on it the last little while.
Yeah, you're more of a country guy than I am.
Yeah, you're not a big.
No, I mean,
shoes, no shirt, no problem kind of guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, hey, I don't have anything against country. It's just not my jam. There are songs out here that I like that I know.
Like, you know? She thinks my tractor's sexy. It's one of my favorites from Kenny Chesney.
Well, John Deere, man, I'm telling you.
Zach Bryan's in town tomorrow, the people tell us. But,
yeah, so maybe that's the reason why.
I don't know the reason why, but the New York Rangers in town, and it is country night at Rogers Arena. And Canucks in tough against a Rangers team that's, you know, obviously got a lot of firepower. They're having a good start to the season. Not a unbelievable start. Well, I guess 11-4-1 is pretty unbelievable.
No, they're good. it's a really good start.
It's just they haven't played as many games as their other teams in the Metropolitan Division. That's why you see the Rangers in fourth of the Metro. But they are off to a really good start. They got a +19 goal differential. And, you know, there's a lot of little things that are going to be interesting to see how the coaching staff tries to make up for Miller's absence. Like, this is it is a little bit of uncharted territory for the team, Sat. I mean, we've talked about this, touched on it with JT. The guy just doesn't miss games.
Yeah.
He's played 381 of a possible 388 regular season games with the Vancouver Canucks since coming over from the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, you know, they just don't have a lot of games where they've played without JT.
I think the last time JT missed a game was because he was in the protocol. Or no, he missed the game last year. They sat him out a game last year.
They sat him out the end of the year. The last game. Game 82.
But outside of that, the other game was before
the trade deadline.
Yeah, they sat him out right. That game they also sat him out. And then before that, it was when he missed two games because he was in the protocol.
Yeah.
So he doesn't miss because of injuries very often.
Yeah, and I think the COVID year with the North Division, he missed a couple of games with COVID, with illness, as a lot of Canucks did that year. So, but he still played 53 of the 56.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's again uncharted territory. So, how do they go about? You know, is Ratu going to be tasked with taking a lot more faceoffs? Because technically, he's their best faceoff guy now.
Yeah, but yes. At the same time, though, do you want him out there taking the toughest D zone faceoffs, and you have to be out there against Zibanejad?
Yeah,
and we've seen him do well in the faceoff circle, but it's still pretty soft situations. Offensive zone faceoffs, there aren't very many high leverage situations.
But you're going to have Blueger with Lekkomäki, so it's like,
yeah,
giving him D zone faceoffs?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think you can. I just don't know, you know, what to fully expect yet. And maybe we'll see ultimately what to do. We can get Suter down the middle too. He can take some of those as well. So I wonder if they get a little creative with what they do, especially against the Rangers. Like, their top six, I know they haven't scored a ton 5-on-5, but there's a lot there that you have to deal with.
Yeah, the Rangers, quality team. Going to be interesting to see how the Canucks go about their deployment without JT Miller in the lineup. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming back, you'll hear from Rick Tocchet, Elias Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes on the news of the day. That's coming up next on Canucks Central.